racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bay.
A very good Friday. Race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebeck.com. And boy, it missed it by that much. I don't know what to say. This one, we're going to talk to Marty McGee in about 10 minutes, and Marty broke the story yesterday. Hearing from Eric Reed that Rick Dawson and Eric were going to bypass Preakness. And, I, the first thing that popped in my head was the Tuesday conversation. I was not so much with Eric on Monday, because that was still kind of the, you know, the afterglow and the haze of, you know, just miraculously winning a Derby. But on Tuesday, if you listen to Rick Dawson here, he was very ambivalent. And I thought, in retrospect, I thought, all right, how much of this is just cautious posturing? How much of this is actually, how serious they might be? And they absolutely say, if you were listening, going back, to last week, it was always their intention. I mean, they didn't expect to win. They thought he would run well, and they thought that they had a live horse in a unique setting. And from that point, where do you go from here? So I'll let Marty kind of riff on this, because when I asked him, I said, can you come on? And I wanted to do some weekend recapping anyway. Marty had a fabulous opening week at Churchill. And in fact, if you haven't been paying attention, Marty has been killing it. The reaction to this, to a Derby winner bypassing Preakness in favor of a 5-week break for Belmont, citing, the way in which they approached even Derby, with a considerable, let's be honest, had a considerable, right? How much time? April 2nd, right? So, the 5-week spread between Turfway and Derby. So, they're sticking by that and feel that the horse, running him back in 2 weeks does him no good. And I mean, certainly, it's amusing. It's amusing to hear a reaction to this, the negative reaction to it, when the immediate reaction was, well, he's a huge play against it in the Preakness. Oh, he'll never win the Preakness. In fact, we've gotten among the reactions, oh, he'll never win in Baltimore. He'll probably never win another race. To he may never race again. That's the the column A, B, and C so far, as opposed to, all right, not the first to do it. If you saw Jay Pribman's piece, Jay right away referenced Gato del Sol. The strike the gold situation was different with the bonus, with the Jersey Derby bonus, there's been Derby winners that, for a variety of reasons, and considering how we have framed this performance and this win as a, once every whatever, 15, 40, 50 year occurrence, well then, then this scenario, in this scenario, then it sort of fits the already surprising storyline. And I think we all talked, right? We talked immediately about Mind That Bird. And of course, supposedly Mind That Bird had no shot in the Preakness. And if it wasn't for Rachel, very well could have won it. So the deep closer scenario, the one thing that doesn't really make sense is the suggestion that, oh, well, the Belmont is going to, you know, this has been so disproven for years and years that, you know, deep closer, the added ground. I mean, and he, to be honest, he is a horse that finished, the way he finished the Derby, feels like, you know, he would be running at the end. And, you know, there are deep closers that have won the Belmont in, you know, in modern times. But the general idea that a deep closer is going to do well at Belmont is really not the case. That's never been a formula for success. That said, again, he finished Derby in a manner that would suggest that another quarter is not going to be an issue for him. So, meanwhile, where does that leave us for next week? Well, it leaves Epicenter with a, you know, with a, obviously a mammoth opportunity. And of course, you know, the decision to run by Steve Asmussen and David Fisk and Ron Winchell and company, that was made before this happened. I mean, they were ready to go, and the filly too. So for those that were simply counting on Rich Strike's presence in the Preakness as a neutralizer for takeout, sorry, that you're not getting that. So I don't think it's vital that a Triple Crown try has to, you know, happen every year. And then, of course, this also immediately provoked the crazy conversation point about we have to change the dates. We have to change the... Jesus, unbelievable. You don't have to change the dates of the three races because one Derby winner is bypassing the Preakness. It's just unbelievable. I mean, all you got to do is dial back to 2014, where we were hearing, you know, there was the whole period leading up to American Pharoah. No one's ever going to do it again. Just leave it alone. And you know, the Preakness is a very viable and standalone as a standalone entity. With or without a Derby winner in it. So, your Country House didn't go, right? I mean, play it where it lies. Sorry. A couple of notes here before we reach from Marty. Little Derby Oaks Day. KHRC, I didn't slip this in yesterday. KHRC, everybody came back clear on testing. So that's always nice. And especially in light of recent circumstances. One news note, too. I don't think we're going to... We already talked to Jay. I don't think we're going to... I tried to reach... I was going to get Brad Free in, but Brad is actually... his daughter is graduating law school. So congratulations to the Freeze. And she went to Loyola. Yeah, so that's very cool. So Brad bypassed, and I didn't reach for Steve Anderson, but it was Steve Anderson's story yesterday. Richard Baltus clearly has got an issue to deal with, and we'll see what Santa Anita and Stronach Group management, how they proceed. They're having an investigation, and they're not allowing Baltus to enter. They only had one entered for the weekend, I think for today, and that horse is not going to, that'll be expected to scratch candy for caramel. But a video of a groom that sounded alarms, and then in Steve Anderson's coverage of this, they also mentioned two horses that have broken down, including last Saturday. And of course, when you're knee deep in Derby Oaks, Speed Cuber. So the horse in question from Sunday, Noble Reflection, withdrawn from the 10th in the day, earlier in the afternoon, when Santa Anita officials became aware that the gelding had been administered a substance within the preceding 24 hours, that based on video. So we'll track that into next week. All right. A couple of racing pieces that we should mention, too. And I'll give you a quick rundown. Marty's joining us momentarily. Jim Miller from Hawthorne. Jim's got an interesting topic. He kind of reached out to me, and it's just nice to check in anyway with Jim. But Jim Miller from Stickney today. Scott Shapiro. No James. James has got the family obligation. So we'll check in with Scott Shapiro and get some Derby recapping. Nick Tamaro, top of hour two. We'll go through that Belmont stake card, and I dug through it. Smallish fields, but a couple of good matchups. And we'll check in with Hammer. We will have a treat. Actually, the second half of the show, essentially, is a big treat. The one and only Jammer, Jerry Jim Gochin. Jerry's got some behind the scenes, kind of what was going on behind the scenes as Eric Reed was preparing, and Jammer kept telling him, you're going to get in, you're going to get in. Even when they were 24th on the list, Jim Gochin was convinced. Jerry has used Eric for years as his trainer. So and as I had mentioned on Monday, one of the, after Eric and his dad, Herbie, the first person I was thinking about was Jammer. Paul Matisse, hour three today, and Paul with his annual recap of Derby Oaks weekend. What went right? What went wrong? What can we learn? Where do we go from here? And before Marty joins us, yesterday at Belmont, listen, $1,000 pick six hit is $1,000, and I hope that a lot of those of you that played the A tickets, $24 A ticket clicked for over $1,000. I was very pleased. There was just enough non-favorites, a couple of second choices that won to make it pay all right. So that was fun yesterday. I kind of was sitting in the backyard watching the races, and it worked out nicely. So that was okay. Marty McGee, I think, is standing by. Marty.
Big.
Mart. Well, the story takes twists and turns.
Yeah, I mean, and what a ride this has been. I'm sorry to see it end. I feel like deep down Eric wanted to run the horse in the Preakness. You know, if they win the Belmont, then what are you going to say? It's like, maybe we could have won the Triple Crown, but nobody will ever know. But what a, you know, the bottom line is the test came back, what, yesterday or 2 days ago. Eric Reed has won the Kentucky Derby, and they can never take that away from him.
Exactly, and we could maybe do this in chronological order from, you know, dialing back to Saturday, and you know what, you've known him even, you know, longer than I have. I've known him maybe 15 years. You've known him your whole career, and that I saw that video yesterday, Marty, of you and Gary Yount when Eric came into the media center for the press conference. It's really warm and special. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, about Reed and you know, your you know, understanding of him as a horseman and the family too, because you must have covered Herb as well.
Well, I never met Herb, believe it or not, because you know, I didn't come to Kentucky till the mid.
That's true.
And shortly thereafter, it had to be in the late 90s when Eric and his wife Kay would occasionally come up to that back part of the Keeneland press box where Steve Klein and I used to sit. And Eric was friends with Steve Klein. I don't know where that came from or anything. But anyway, Eric would just get away from the throngs at Keeneland to, you know, get a moment's peace back there with us. And so I got to know him then. He's really a nice guy, you know, pretty quiet and didn't make a lot of noise or anything. But anyway, I hadn't talked to him in a long time. As a matter of fact, when the fire happened in December 2016, I didn't talk to him. I thought, you know, I thought I'd call him, but no. And then just out of the blue, about last summer, I had an old wind picture. My girlfriend Alicia had a picture of Eric when he was real young, so I sent it to him and via text, and he said, "Where'd you get this?" And I said, "If I told you, I'd have to kill you." So anyway, he come Derby time, and you peruse those lists of horses who were on the thing, and his grit strike was like, I don't know, 27, and he had 21 points. And Eric, out of the blue, called me one day. He says, "Do we have a chance to get in?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know." You know, so then ultimately on April 20th, I wrote a story about for the Racing Forum. It was in the Friday, April 22 editions of the Forum that brought up the possibility of Rick Strike being on the Derby program. You know, I thought maybe he'd make number 24, you know, if things unfolded the way. Well, long story short, on Friday morning, last Friday morning, right about this time is when he got in. And I had called him from, I was doing some work at my brother's office. I hardly ever do this, but I was in there killing some time before I had to do a radio show last Oaks morning. And so I said, "Eric, why don't you prepare what's essentially your concession speech for me?" You know, it was a fun, so he did, it was a fun time. You know, I hope I get to have this experience for real. At 9:01, he texted me, and I have a copy of the text. He said, "Well, it was a good experience. You know, thanks for everything you did, blah, blah, blah." Well, I'm in the Churchill Racing office by then. Barbara Gordon says, Lucas is out, Eric's in. And so I said, you know, I put out a tweet, wait, you know, he's in. So, of course, nobody gave him much of a chance. I love the fact that the Churchill official T-shirt has the first 20 on the back. And there's no Rich Strike. The winner is not in the field. You know, and then, so I bet $8 to win on the horse. You know, I'm betting my brains out on Zandon and some other stuff. And so that about got me even. But anyway, it was so unbelievable. And I, like almost everybody else, I couldn't tell who won until about 10 seconds after into the gallop out. I'm thinking, that's Rich Strike. And so I made it like a shriek of like, oh, I can't believe this. And so, you know, and then it all happened. Then I went down and, yeah, it was so great. It's one of the best derbies I've ever seen. I've seen a whole bunch of them.
You're 49th, and I was watching at about the 16th pole, and when there was that opening between, you know, there was Epicenter and Zandon, you know, confronting him, and when he gets into that open, you know, that open spot in between those two and the rest of the field, you know, he's recognizable as a chestnut, first of all. But then when I saw the two, I knew it wasn't the white, that it wasn't Happy Jack. I said, oh, my God, this is Rich Strike. And I mean, it was like slow motion watching the end of the race, Marty. And I you know, because we talked daily on this from Churchill, not even from Churchill, for weeks leading up to the Churchill trip. We talked regularly about trying to get Sonny Leone, and you know, my conversation with Eric and exchanges, he kept referencing his team, the Dixons, and Sonny, about how great it would be for them and how much everybody that stuck with him when there was real, you know, there was real indecision about, you know, being able to regroup and go forward. You know, not to mention, you know, the financial strain and wherewithal that it took to, you know, to keep going. And that's the only reason he wanted even just to get into the race, let alone win the thing.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole people have said if you tried to sell this to Disney, they wouldn't take it because it's too unbelievable. It's true. And it's such a heartwarming story, and I'm really happy about it still. And I wish they were going to the Preakness. They're not, but you know, I can respect that too.
Well, and let's forge into that, and you and Jay and the form, the first to report it, the reaction and from your experience and also from those years in Baltimore, knowing that if Chick Lange were there, I suppose another goat would be lined up to go into stall 40. But
that's funny. I asked Eric the other day. I said, "Are you going to go into stall 40?" This is when we assumed he was going to run. He goes, "I don't know what that is." He had never heard of stall 40. So it's so great. You know, Chick Lange was one of my benefactors and supporters when I first came around Maryland in '85, and you know, so the Gato del Sol goat story had happened a few years before that, but you know, he was extremely prideful of the Preakness, and took it as a personal insult if you did not come with the Derby winner. So this is really, as Jay reported, well, he did it on Spindabuck too, I guess. Spindabuck and Gato del Sol. But I lost my train of thought here, Steve. What were we talking
about? Just the idea that a Derby winner wants more time between starts, and it, you know, it of course, you know, it's triggered, you know, the easily triggered people that you know, that'll find any excuse to discuss changing the timing of the Triple Crown and you know, moving the races around and so forth. I mean, I'm always anti, and I at the same time, I don't think this is the worst thing that's happened in the history of thoroughbred racing.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, you know, chances were, I've been talking to my buddy Keith Fusel, who makes a line for Pimlico, and he was wanting to make him, when we had a whole bunch, we had 11 or 12 or 13 going to the Preakness, he wanted to make Rich Strike 10 or 12 to 1, which speaks to his relative chances. You know, the probability of him winning right back at Pimlico was not very good. So I don't know if that played into the decision made by the owner, Rick Dawson. I know that Eric himself, I mean, I shouldn't say that he wanted to run and he's against his owner, but I think if the owner had said, let's run, Eric would have said, well, let's go. So, you know, it, again, it's not that big of a deal in terms of losing out on the chance of the Triple Crown, because I have not seen any kind of line, Steve, but he would have been, I'd say, out of the Derby, 20 to 1 to win the Triple Crown, at least. Whereas if you get a horse like Barbaro, I remember betting a whole bunch on him after the Derby to win the Triple Crown. We all know what happened there, but and the odds were like 3 to 1 or something. So You know, just the whole thing of him skipping the Preakness, as you say, is not the worst thing to ever happen here. We're all going to live.
It seems to me that those that are most put out by this are the ones that recognize the wagering opportunity that he would represent in the race and as a you know, takeout neutralizer, least, you know, for those that would have lined up to bet against. But we will. We're going to hear from Jerry Jim Gochin, which should be very entertaining. I mean, he's pretty entertaining even without his trainer winning the Derby. But Jammer was kind of operating behind the scenes. So we'll hear some more behind-the-scenes stories of the Reed Barn from Jammer in hour two. Marty, some other overall thoughts?
For breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands in Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappet and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Association. What happened there? There you go. I'm sorry. I'm back, Case.
Four brand new races to be run at Clark's for PA sired, PA bred to.
I think we dropped on my end up here. Marty, I was talking about the pace and the meltdown scenario, and Mo Donegal even complicated his assignment further with that leap in the air a little bit, that little hop start, and that even set him back further. But, talk about the way this race unfolded. No, do we not? Boy. Did you lose Marty? I guess, okay, all right, yeah, get Marty back, because I do want to get, we'll get Marty right back. I'm anxious to hear Nick and, because, Nick was actually in the opposite camp. Nick's thought was that there was potential here for Epicenter to maybe control it from the front end, and obviously, that didn't happen, but... Epicenter, comes out. You gotta imagine he is just heavily bet coming in. So, and of course, early voting will be there to set the pace
as well.
There's Marty. Marty, sorry, I think I got dropped on my end up here. I was talking the pace and the way the race unfolded and what you saw going back watching the replay a few times.
Well, I mean, we all kind of thought there was a possibility of a meltdown the way it happened with Summers Tomorrow and Classic Causeway, although Classic Causeway wasn't even up on the pace at all. But, just the fact they went as fast as they did set it up for a closer. But they all had, they all had their chances to close, and only one of them really did, and it was the winner. So, that's to his credit.
Anybody's trips in there that you picked up on later on?
Not really. Zandon had every chance to win. So did Epicenter. I think Epicenter might be even money or so come Preakness Day. I don't know if you noticed the chart that I worked up. It's buyer beware with a Derby runner-up back in the Preakness. Since Ballyache turned the tables on Venetian Way in 1960, we've only had three Derby runners-up come back and win the Preakness, and a whole bunch of them, I think 11, have been the favorites, and only one of them, and that was Prairie Bayou 29 years ago in 1993, won the Preakness as the favorite and the Derby runner-up, and that's the role that will be filled by Epicenter. So tread lightly there. You know, we've had a whole bunch of them fool you. Easy Goer, and Hill Rise back in 64, and you know, horses like Menifee and Captain Bodget and Victory Gallop, they were all favored in the Preakness and didn't win the Preakness after finishing second in the Derby. So, you know, I don't know who can beat him. I guess early voting would be the most logical candidate, if not Secret Oath. It looks like we're only going to get 8 or 9 for the Preakness. By the way, I'll miss you, Vic. I'm staying home in Louisville for this one. And, yeah. So the race lacks a lot of drama and intrigue without the Derby winner, but as we were talking about earlier, we'll go forward nonetheless.
Well, it does get enhanced by the presence of the filly. Having Secret Oath in there is certainly a storyline, and we're waiting on Chad Brown's call on Zandon as well.
Well, I mean, he's pretty much said he's not going to run. I mean, he's saying...
pretty much,
he's
but,
saying,
you know...
he's saying leaning against, and it is the M.O. for a guy like Chad to not run back in 2 weeks. That, you know, therein lies the dilemma that, you know, has kind of dominated the conversation for the last 24 hours is, you know, that's why, it's essentially why Eric's not running back, because of the 2 weeks.
Well, the official word is that now he's completely ruled out at this point. Jeff Drown making the announcement in just the last few minutes. So we can officially take Zandon out of the picture, but Chad with the cloud computing 2.0 when it comes to early voting and the filly. And, you know, simplification, I love the early arrival. He was my Derby play, and, I mean, he's viable in here, too. But, I mean, Epicenter, in a lot of ways, Marty, in a lot of ways, Epicenter, I keep bringing up Oxbow from Orbs Derby, and that Epicenter's got the Oxbow kind of look. The only horse that survived, the pace and was there at the end.
Yeah, Epicenter even, early voting 3-1, Secret Oath 4-1, Simplification 6-1. There you go.
All right. Well, beyond the Derby, Marty, some of the other you had, I have already noted this week, Marty, among the handicappers, I've told everybody that you've been absolutely white hot for weeks, and a great start to the Churchill season. 9 on top winners in the 2 days, Oaks and Derby. What else did you come away with from Friday and Saturday?
I've got some buddies I hang with, and they all they've talked about is three technique in that win by Jason Cook and David Miller, and how awesome that was. You know, his daughter. I don't know if I've told you this, but his daughter Peyton, Jason Cook's daughter, my two daughters Kelly and Molly, who are now 27 and 24, babysat her a lot when Jason, you know, had to go tend to other duties as a single father. So. Jason told me he saw people, and I'm not going to name any names, who had tears in their eyes as they were watching the winter celebration unfold, and what a tremendous story that was. And I was glad to be able to write that. I think it ran early this week on DRF.com, but it's stories like that that keep us coming back. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here writing about a guy named Steve Capps for the Sunday editions of the Forum. He won a race last evening, the fourth race, with a filly named Hannah's Haven. And it was just his second career win. He's 64 years old. He used to work as a hot walker and groom for Harry Trotsick and T.W. Kelly. And he made it up to groom for Jack Van Berg and Bill Mott. He's been an agent and breaks babies and raised two kids and worked out of racing for a while. And it's just, there's all kinds of good stories in this game, Steve.
Oh, I love it. And the mention of Trotsik, I'll send you a picture you can share with him. That I saw that. It's funny. I printed the Churchill charts from yesterday, and it's funny. But the two Steve Asmussen pushes from Tuesday, Steve talked about Undelay in that maiden first, and then of course Alejandro, the nephew of Rachel Alexandra, not definitely. What would we call it? That's not right. Rachel Valentina's son. They both ran well. Undelay was 10-1, but got beat by Chapman and the Violence colt, Drew's Gold. Two placements for Asmussen. But I saw that Steve Capps had won a race.
Yeah, and I just talked to him about an hour ago, and it's a good story. You know, my brother, Paul, one of his first guys, he worked for a guy named Cecil Bernice, and he worked for Harry Trotsik, and they called him Traps Trotsik because traps is your gear, your webbings and your tack and everything. And they said that Harry never got rid of anything, so he had all these old traps that he'd take from track to track. the old Hasty House Farm house trainer.
I love it. Couple of other winners of yours that you identified. You liked Obligatory in the grade one for the fillies and mares. That was a good call. And Marcus actually also made her his best bet.
She's got to be the favorite right now for the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, if there is such a thing. Guys, that run she produced down the lane was fabulous. And I messed up my bet because I really thought that Edgeway would put away the other speed and be those two to the wire, but she didn't hold up her end of the deal. But anyway, had a great week betting. My brother had that horse. You know, they interviewed me on TBG for the first time in years, and I touted that horse. It was right before my brother's race, and I touted that horse that he won with on Thursday, and that catapulted me to a resounding victory.
I love it. Marty, anything for today or tomorrow at Churchill, too?
Oh, gosh. The days are I can get them all mixed up. I'm looking at the Sunday overnight, and Soup and Sandwich, the last place finisher in the Derby last year, is back in, and he seems like he's rounded back to form. I've got him picked in the eighth race on Sunday. That's the best I can do for you, Beck.
All right, well, and tomorrow in the second, you tabbed Russian Roulette as your best of the day in a 10-claimer.
Okay. I don't have it.
That's like probably you probably did that on Tuesday. You were or no Wednesday night probably 8-5 though for Matt Shearer is Russian Roulette. And Marty's been the best advice we can give is just roll with Marty. Somebody said, who was it that said to me in the press? In the press quarters, they said, I can't hit a lick. And I said, just bet along with Marty. Just whatever Marty's got in the boxes, in the grid, get with him.
Yeah, that's also the day I'm going to get blank, too, Vic. So, yeah.
That's the way it works.
Take it all with this is a very humbling game, as we all know.
Exactly. Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee. Marty, so much fun the 2 weeks. Thanks for everything. And I am sorry you're not going to be in Baltimore. Always one of the highlights. We talk about your years at the Baltimore Sun and the time there before you joined the Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority, since
1894. Thanks a lot, Vic. See ya.
Marty McGee, everybody. We'll stay here and catch up. We lost a couple of minutes there. Not a big deal. We'll be all right. Actually, I've got a little case. I've got a little bit of room probably with Jim. I don't want to, because Nick, we got to keep Nick on time. And let's, you know what we're going to do? Let's slip. Scott in first, all right? Scott Shapiro, and we'll get some plays from him, all right? I think we're going to do that, and then probably at the top of the hour, we'll go to Nick, and then I'll get Jim Miller. And it gives us Jim and Hammer and Jammer and Paul Matisse. All right, that's going to work. All right? So let me give you, go to Shap. And since he's been in person the last couple of weeks, right? Let me make sure that I'm giving you the right. I hate that. Yeah, that's right. Go ahead. Go with that. You know what I wanted to mention? Because I was cleaning through all the various DPs and everything else that I accrue over a period like the lead up to Derby. The morning line that we used from Tyler Wissman ended up, Tyler could not have done a better job. I mean, he nailed that top to bottom, starting with Epicenter, who he had at 9-2 as the favorite. He went off at 4-1. Zandon, he had it 5-1, 6-1. Taba, he had 6-1, basically 6-1. Mo Donegal was his, and Messier were his third and fourth choices at 10-1. Mo Donegal went off at 10-1. Messier, a couple ticks below, 7-1. He said 12-1 next on Abario, went off at 15-1. Then he had Cyberknife 12-1, went off at 15-1. Charge It, he had it 15-1, went off at 16-1. And then Smile Happy, he had it 15-1, went off at 14-1. Just a tremendous job by Tyler. And that's one of the reasons we kind of focused. And then in terms of the 50-1s, he was, right on there. Happy Jack, of course, who was a 50-1, and who, by the way, is going to go in Preakness, according to Doug O'Neill yesterday. He had Happy Jack at 50-1, but Happy Jack actually went off at 23-1. Basically, the magic of having the name Jack in your horse's name. If you want to depress the price of your horse, put Jack in the name, like My Boy Jack, and now Happy Jack. If you're a horse player owner, there's a warning for you. don't do it. Just say no. Come up with something else. I don't know how to explain. It's crazy. It's just crazy. That's the second Derby now in 3 years, 4 years with a Jack that, took money that really had no business taking money. Scott Shapiro swings by. Shap, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. I saw you get back to work yesterday. It's the post-Derby miasma starts to clear, and everybody has to get back to work. The first order of business before you have any weekend plays, your Oaks and Derby aftermath, your postscript.
Yeah, in terms of the Oaks, Secret Oaks, to me, much the best. I thought kind of a sneaky good effort from Echo Zulu, even though we'll probably see her turn back to one turn after giving the mile and an eighth a go. They went pretty quick up front, sat off the pace, and was much the best of those involved early on. The others really struggled to finish the deal, so I thought she didn't lose anything in defeat. But Ness had a pretty good and fair run of it, as did Kathleen O, and obviously Ness finishing second, but a distant, well-beaten second. And Kathleen O, probably a little disappointing for her backers and her connections, getting that kind of favorable setup up front. But to me, Secret Oath, much the best, and a deserving chance to take on the boys in the Preakness again after that third-place effort in the Arkansas Derby. And then in terms of the Kentucky Derby, the two horses out of the Risen Star, Epicenter and Zandon, both ran real big. I thought Zandon had every chance to get by Epicenter, Rich Strike aside, and Epicenter showed a lot of heart to be able to hold that one off when making that first move. Obviously a tremendous ride and story for Rich Strike coming from well out of a great ride by Sonny Leone, and much respect to the connections and doing what they want to do in terms of the Belmont not in the Preakness. I thought Simplification, who ran fourth, could have easily been fifth or sixth if not for a patient good ride by Jose Ortiz. You know, Sonny Leone's ride stood out, but I thought Ortiz had a sneaky good ride. Modonegal, you know, maybe could have gotten into the mix a little more with a similar voyage as Rich Strike, but I don't think he had the momentum despite that, even if he came along the inside to get the best of the top three. But and then, you know, Messier was probably a pretty sneaky good effort. Very early move off that real hot pace by Johnny V. And I thought Cava was as disappointing as anyone. Definitely a part of things early on, but really showed no fight. And Cyberknife a little bit disappointing as well. But nothing too crazy in terms of playbacks or play against moving forward. But looking forward to the Preakness.
Well, it had it all. it was about as crazy an ending, you know, to a Derby weekend. I suppose I you know, it's not like Mind That Bird is so far, you know, removed either. It's not like you know, it's decades ago. It's and, you know, fresh enough, I think, in the memory. But you know, for anybody that's come to the game since then, it was an unusual finish. And
it was the one thing I'll say, I think, very positive, other than, you know, connection, getting the huge win is always a cool story. But I got a lot of, you know, texts and emails and stuff from people that I, you know, don't even hear from normally at Derby time, you know, asking questions about, you know, how this happened or why this happened, and, you know, the also eligible getting in, and, you know, the pace being hot and all that stuff, which I thought was very good for the game, you know, even though I ripped up a bunch of tickets and would have done a lot better if it was an Epicenters and in 1-2 punch. But tremendous story and a great return weekend for the Derby and the cards before it. You know, full fans just felt real great to be back, and we dodged the bad weather for the most part.
There you go. All right, well, let's for those that had their Derby tickets ripped out from under them, they're alive. I've seen so many comments of people that when they saw Epicenter rebuff Zandon, they thought, you know, he's home, you know, he's home free. And so many people had you know, had their tickets ending with either Epicenter or Zandon. That and so there's, I think, some of the stunned response to the end, to the finish, and to the winner, has to do with that. You know, that people thought, all right, where I'm home, with whatever plays they had ending that way. So it's it's just wild, just crazy. All right, let's get some action. What do we like this weekend?
Yeah, you want to start with, I got a couple things today and then a couple
sure.
of things tomorrow. Starting today, I thought the card was pretty challenging today, especially later on in the proceedings. I know my colleague Joe Krzysztofek has a number of prices on top, and I have a couple as well, starting in race 7. A maiden special weight event, a mile and an eighth over the turf course. And I don't fully trust any of the runners with two-term turf experience, so I'm taking a bit of a chance in here with a second-time starter, number 6, Gillane, a 3-year-old colt for Dane Kibitzki. Kibitzki, 20% first-time turf, 121 start sample size, $2.90 ROI. And the Dam, Daydream, and Gracie won 6 of 19 on the turf for over $170,000. And this one exits the maiden race where B-Doc ran off the screen for Doug O'Neill. So really didn't get out of the gates well that day. Finished fourth, but a well-beaten fourth. Hopefully he can get out of the gates better and maybe dictate terms and put us off the pace with Colby Hernandez. So that's race 7, number 6, Gillane at 15-1. And then... and then in the next race, I got my play of the day is number, I mean, I respect, very good race, by the way, the 8th, a third level allowance of that might as well be a stakes race, $141,000 purse. for the feature today, mile and a 16th on the main track. And no doubt, you know, Masca Parade is very interesting in here. First start since the sixth place effort in the Traverse for Al Stahl, and then also Promise Keeper, who comes off, been freshened up after that third place effort to Olympiad and Proxy, losing very little in the defeat in the New Orleans Classic. But I think number six, Twilight Blue, is sitting on a career best effort first over the form cycle. Has run two good races over this racetrack for Joe Sharp. Won the day return race back on February 25th at Oaklawn, and then was wide throughout last time out against somewhat similar, weaker group, but you know, similar condition at Oaklawn Park. I think Brian Hernandez Jr. should be able to sit a nice trip just off the pace, and at 12-1 on the morning line, I like Twilight Blue quite a bit for that big race today.
Well, and I appreciate the, you know, the reaching for a price. I Mass Parade, it, to me, the way in which Al Stahl has kind of brought him along and has handled him conservatively, imagining with the Foster in mind, I imagine he'll be ready, but. It is a good group. I'll have to look at this, actually, a little bit. This is a nice race.
It's weird that he took the blinkers off in the two starts at Saratoga after those big efforts, especially the Ohio Derby and then the huge race on the Derby undercard. And the results weren't quite as good. Those were without LASIK. I'm sorry. Now he takes the blinkers off. My apologies to everybody there. Just kind of wondering why the blinkers would come off with all those good efforts with the blinkers. But it would be good for him to get LASIK back.
With the LASIK is certainly the significant factor here. But if I had to guess on the blinkers, when you have a young horse, and this horse started his career with blinkers, it might just simply be a maturity thing, and that you know, that Al just sees him, you know, that he's not as easily distracted or intimidated by other horses, or you know, experimenting, taking them off, you know, to see, you know, have him relax a little bit more. I mean, he is a horse that's, you know, that when he broke his maiden, he won up. In fact, both of his wins have been fairly close to the pace. So it might just be a case of, you know, maturity. And that's a question you can ask Al in the winner's circle. Or have Joe do it.
I'm looking forward to seeing his return. Was very impressed with what he put forth, you know, basically from March on last year after taking a little while to figure things out. But good point with you on the equipment change. So really looking forward to that race. Very, very difficult late pick five today. Definitely if you're someone that likes opportunities to maybe bust out in a couple of your legs and spread out a little bit, I think it's a great sequence to jump in. And the bet back races for Twin Spires promotion, we're doing a bet back promotion every day here at Churchill House, get up to $10 back on second or third on your win bet. Those are 7, 8, and 9, all three very competitive races, so definitely check that
nice.
Out and opt in before you begin to play. So all right, then Saturday, didn't think there was as many price opportunities on Saturday. Did have one in the last race of the card, and the bet back on Saturday are races 7, 9, and 11. But a couple horses I like, race 3, the Turf Sprint first level allowance event, and number 2, Apache Tears, ran huge at Keeneland, losing to Lyrical Poet for Wesley Ward, who ran a big race that day, wiring out the field at even money. But Apache Tears had a nice pocket trip and almost ran that one down at nearly 17-1. And I think she'd get a pretty similar trip in here against a group that's solid, doesn't contain anyone like Lyrical Poet. So I thought 4-1 for the Bull McKeever looks like a pretty fair price in that one. And race 4, $20,000 maiden claimer. I thought this was a pretty wide open group, and I have some interest in number 2, Nibbles. 6-1 on the morning line. First start at 2 turns for Jeff Hiles, who claimed this one for $50,000 at Fairgrounds. Took a lot of money on debut that day, but followed the two pace setters around the track. I think on the stretch out could be involved under Corey Lannery, and don't see a heck of a lot of speed, so maybe an aggressive ride there and a pretty good price in the fourth. That's number two, Nibbles. And then towards the back of the card, I got two plays. One of them, a low-priced horse, race seven, starts the late pick five, first level allowance event for three-year-old fillies over the newly renovated turf course. And number one, Walk-A-Thon, was extremely well-met early on in her career. On debut, in fact, went off at 8-5 at Keeneland in a 10-horse field. You don't see Ian Wilkes firsters go off at that price normally, but very disappointing that day. Bounced back a little bit in the subsequent starts on the dirt, but really seemed to find her surface, I thought, on the turf at Keeneland on April 22nd. Relaxed real nicely, and I thought finished well. I think she's got a good chance to win back with the rail draw with Julian Le Perru returning. And my play of the day, race 11, finale, is made special weight event over the turf course for fillies and mares. And I thought number two, She's Gone, was capable of taking a big step forward here. And fourth career start, second off the bench for Vicki Oliver. The dam, She's Not Here, won the yellow ribbon a couple of times. This horse bred to go two turns. And I thought really never got a fair shot at it. Rafael Bayrano did a real good job, the far outside draw of angling over and saving ground in that Keeneland race first off the bench. But was along the inside, just kind of caught behind horses, never really got a fair shake. I think with a fair shake at 12-1, Bayrano riding very well with these off-the-pace type runners to start the meet. Percentage not that high, but his ROI is booted home some prices. And hopefully he can boot another one home to end the day with She's Gone.
12-1 for the two horse in the 11th race for Scott and Vicki Oliver and Raffi. She's Gone, 12-1, and then Walk-A-Thon in that seventh. You know, there's a horse in the seventh that I'm a little interested in getting on the grass, even though the Cupids are not necessarily doing much on turf so far. Princess of the North did run nicely in breaking her maiden and then in that stake try at Turfway. She was okay on the synthetic. If she translates to grass, and that's what Cassie and Dave Carroll are doing here, Princess of the North, you get Giroux and you're 12-1 there. So maybe if you're keying off of Scott's Walk-A-Thon, you can include the 9 as well, Princess of the North. Scott, what'd you do in the feature, in the overnight stake, the Mamzell, the turf sprint?
Yeah, I mean, it just looks to me as if it's Twilight Gleaming race to lose without question. I mean, she lost at 4-5 last time, but Slipstream ran huge, I thought. So I don't think Twilight Gleaming really lost anything in defeat. There's no one of that caliber in this field, in my opinion. If you're looking for some value horses underneath, I thought maybe the 11 Divine Charger on the far outside, moving back to the grass for Jordan Blair, who does good things with his starters here at Churchill. Not a huge win percentage, but a positive ROI. I thought the outside draw was interesting for this one. You get Brian Hernandez Jr. And then I also thought that Marty's Kitchen for Michelle Lovell, who won nicely on debut on February 26th at Fairgrounds, wasn't the strongest group, but she won real nicely. Michelle tried the dirt last time at Keeneland, and she got caught up in an early duel, tired. So I thought maybe Margie's Kitchen and Divine Charger could maybe provide some value underneath, but I don't know about you. To me, Twilight Gleaming looked like a much best in here.
Well, there is one horse I guess we should point out, since Jerry Jamgochian is going to join us later. There's some low-profile connections in here. Royal County, the 7, Eric Reed and Sonny Leone. And it's pretty funny to look down and see Sonny Leone's riding stats. 1-for-1.
I'm wondering, they had a horse today, too. I'm wondering, do you think, you know, are they going to take a little more money than they used to take? Or is it kind of one of those, I don't know. But it is interesting to see now. I mean, I saw these connections a lot at Turfway. You see them, you know, Keeneland and here and now. Yeah. There's a Kentucky Derby winning connections. It's sure something.
I love it. Well, Scott, I had a great time with you the 2 weeks. Thanks for everything. And we'll touch base through this spring meet. And good luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
Sounds good, Steve. It was great getting to see you so much, and you have a great weekend. Good luck to you today and tomorrow as well.
Twin Spires and plenty of great offers, including a hit it and split it Lone Star pick four promotion, as well as the placement deal. Just opt in on all of them. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp, 34. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Nick Tamaro standing by. We got Nick. We're going to check in with Jim Miller at Hawthorne as well. Hammer and Jammer. a rare opportunity to have Hammer and Jammer on one show. Paul Matisse in hour three for his always enjoyable Derby Oaks weekend recap. And speaking of Derby Oaks weekend recaps, Thorograph, the most generous proprietor in all of racing information, Jerry Brown has got the figs up, came up, I think, on Wednesday night. The figs are up if you want to review how everybody ran Friday and Saturday. Very interesting. And frankly, the number, he basically ran a one, Rich Strike, and given, you know, where he had come from off the synthetic, probably quite beneficial to take the 5 weeks between starts, to be honest. I mean, if it was strictly, you know, meat and potatoes racing, you absolutely would give your horse as much time off of that effort as you could. I mean, the fact that it's Preakness, it's a little different. We'll see what Nick thinks. Nick Tamaro next at the races. Weekend preview brought to you by Twin Spires. Back after this.
The Bonds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallion